Brick Limited. Say good morning and welcome.
Thank you.
Just bear with me a minute. So thanks for putting in your original submission, which we read, and also the precept lab briefs of evidence from Hunter and James. We've also read all of that material, so you don't need to reread that to us. You're welcome to highlight your key points for us.
Okay, my name is Claire Hunter, and I've provided you a bit of a summary. I think you've got a copy of that, so I'd just like to quickly read through that. I am joined today by Mr. Doyle Richardson, who is Alliance Group Limited Environmental Manager. Mr. Richardson is available to answer any questions the panel may have with regard to Alliance's plants and operations in the Southland region. I'm also joined by Dr. Mark James, who has prepared evidence addressing specifically some of the water quality standards that have been proposed for waterways with which Alliance has an interest. Within the Southland region, Alliance currently operates three plants situated at Lawnville, Makarewa and Matara. Notably, it is the largest employer in Southland, employing over 2,200 people seasonally. Alliance made various submissions on the provisions of the proposed Southland Water and Land Plan. In summary, Alliance submitted that an essential part of regional growth and economic well-being within the Southland region is generated by the farming and rural industry. It provides a backbone to the regional economy, and Alliance submitted that such activities should not be constrained by inappropriate or unduly onerous plan provisions unless such provisions are necessary to achieve the purpose of the Act. In this regard, Alliance submitted in support of Objective 2, which recognises that water and land are enablers of economic, social and cultural well-being within the Southland region. I agree that this is an appropriate objective, but consider that it needs to be supported by policy. I have suggested such a policy in my evidence. It is particularly important in my view that the proposed plan suitably recognises that there are significant benefits that can be derived from the use and development of the region's land and water resources, subject to this occurring within acceptable environmental limits. This is on the basis that the objectives and policies of a planning document have assumed a greater role following the High Court's confirmation of King Salmon and Davidson, which essentially confirms that King Salmon type evaluations of policy should also apply to the assessment of resource consent applications. In practice, this means that once the proposed plan becomes operative, when considering an application for resource consent, a decision maker cannot go beyond the objectives and policies of the plan and refer to Part 2 unless under exceptional circumstances. Accordingly, it is important that the objectives and policies of the proposed plan provide this balance and suitably recognise and provide for the continued use and development of the water and land resource within acceptable environmental limits. Alliance is also concerned that there is an overarching emphasis within the proposed plan to avoid all discharges, which cause a reduction in water quality or do not achieve alignment with the water quality standards in Appendix E. This approach is not considered to be consistent with the NPS for freshwater management, which requires regional councils to maintain water quality within freshwater management units. To explain, the NPS does not require that there is absolutely no reduction in the quality of freshwater at any point in every surface water body, estuary and coastal lagoon throughout the region. Rather, it approaches management of water quality at the FMU level. In this regard, it allows there to be some variance within a given water body, but requires that the overall quality of the water within the MFU achieves certain prescribed attribute standards. If this approach was not applied, it would be virtually impossible in some cases for larger scale industries to undertake point source discharges at all. In light of the above, it is my view that as a general principle, careful precision is required in drafting policy to ensure that its language prescribes outcomes that genuinely achieve the stated purpose of the Act. Use of terms like avoid or prevent should be applied where the stakes are highest in terms of a need to preserve environmental qualities that prevail in a given location or situation. In light of King Salmon and Davidson, the panel should be aware that where such language is used, this will generally foreclose any activity that results in any adverse effect which changes the state of water quality, however small. Consideration should be given to adopting terms like avoid, remedy or mitigate if greater flexibility in approaching the management of adverse effects is desired in a certain set of circumstances or where environmental values determine that such an approach is the most efficient and effective. Diligence is necessary to ensure that the use of unduly narrow language in policy drafting does not improperly impede otherwise worthy outcomes. In this regard, I know that some of Alliance's discharges from its plants are likely to be non-compliant activities in accordance with the proposed plan. This is largely because Alliance's plants are located within catchments that are all strongly influenced by surrounding land use and non-point discharges which have impacted upon water quality. For example, at its Lawnball plant, which has recently gone through a reconsenting process, despite significant improvements in the discharge quality being proposed, this is predicted to only result in a localised improvement in water quality within the Makarua River. And some of the water quality standards in the plan will be difficult to achieve until such time as water quality further up the catchment is markedly improved. If the language of the provisions in the proposed plan require the absolute avoidance of adverse effects, one could argue that no reduction in water quality and or absolute compliance with the Appendix E water quality standards is the only available management outcome. This is not appropriate, and I am of the view that the proposed plan, like the operative plan, needs to better acknowledge circumstances where, due to the existing environment, compliance with the water quality standards cannot be achieved via amendments I have suggested to proposed policies 13, 15, 17, and rules 5 and 6. I also thought it might be useful to run through how the rules and policy framework of concern will work in practice. A discharge activity is proposed, which will cause a reduction in the water quality standards in Appendix E. Let's say it's a temporary reduction. It is, however, a non-complying activity pursuant to rules 5 and 6 of the proposed plan. A non-compliant activity requires a fulsome investigation into the actual or potential effects of the activity, and consent cannot be granted unless one of the two gateway tests can be satisfied. A forensic assessment of the application's consistency with the objectives and policies of the plan will be necessary. Policy 15 requires avoiding new discharges to surface water bodies that will reduce water quality beyond the zone of reasonable mixing. Policy 17.6, to avoid adverse effects on water quality. In the King Salmon era, avoiding means not allowing or preventing the occurrence of. And where a directive policy requires avoidance of an activity, it effectively acts as a prohibition and prevents the granting of a resource consent. There is limited ability to consider the overall merits of the proposal in such circumstances. Policies 15 and 17 in particular provide no flexibility for consideration of the existing environment, the duration or spatial extent of the reduction, the scale or significance of the adverse effects resulting from the reduction, or the mitigation or remediation that might be proposed to address any such reduction. This inflexibility is not appropriate in my view. Alliance is also concerned that the proposed plan does not suitably recognise the critical nature of its water tax. During times of extreme drought, farmers can often be forced to quickly destock their farms, which leads to an influx of animals at Alliance's plants. It is therefore necessary to enable Alliance's plants to continue to process stock, primarily in the interest of animal welfare during such times. Alliance's current water take consents all recognise this. However, it is not recognised through the provisions of the plan, and it is my view that it needs to be better provided for. Alliance is also concerned with some of the conditions which trigger non-compliant activity status attaching to some of the rules within the proposed plan. Rule 34, for example, sets out that the discharge to land of wastewater sludge or effluent from an industrial trade process is a discretionary activity, provided certain conditions can be achieved. Failure to comply with these conditions results in non-compliant activity status. One of these conditions is a requirement to undertake a pond drop test. Advice from Paddle Dalymore Partners indicates that there are a number of issues associated with applying the pond drop test on large-scale effluent storage and treatment schemes, and conclude that for wastewater systems such as at Alliance's Lawnball plant, to assess their structural integrity is not a useful method. I am of the view that such conditions will be difficult to easily assess, and if there are any issues with structural integrity of the storage facilities, then this, in my view, is something that can be picked up and adequately assessed through a discretionary activity consent process. Alliance is also concerned with some of the limit setting that has been undertaken as part of the proposed plan. In particular, it is noted that Appendix E standards are a rollover from the existing water quality standards contained in the operative plan. There is evidence that some of these limits are inconsistent with the existing state of the environment conditions and also other water quality guidelines and standards that are available. It is also not clear what the status of these standards will be once the limit setting process that is required to manage water quality in each FMU in the regions has occurred. Fish and Game, by its submission, sought to include the Matara River at the Matara Bridge within the list of popular bathing sites in Southland. This area is located immediately downstream of Alliance's Matara processing plant's discharge to the river. Alliance has stated that it does not consider it to be appropriate to include this site as an identified bathing area. Alliance is committed to progressive improvements in its environmental performance, including at Matara. However, managing water quality at this location to a contact recreation standard would likely be impractical and highly onerous without proportionate benefit. This could have significant adverse effects on the viability of the plant, and such effects have not been properly considered in Section 32 terms. As such, it is my view that it would not be appropriate to include this site as a designated bathing area. I'd like to thank the panel for its time today and for allowing Alliance's submission to be heard. I'd be happy to answer any questions now or at the end of the summary presentation by Dr. James.
I think we'll hear Dr. James' summary first. Normally we'd have the technical witness first and then the planning witness second.
Yeah, it was just...
It's all right. So brief summary, Mr. James.
All right, Mark James, I'm an environmental consultant and provide advice to Alliance. Was also heavily involved in the Lawnball application. Two clarifications, corrections in my evidence. Paragraph 12, near the end of that, I talk about defined in Appendix G and within 1 kilometre immediately downstream, that should be upstream of the sites.
Yeah.
I also note here that Appendix G talks about 100 metres downstream and upstream of the site, whereas the text in the plan talks about 1 kilometre upstream of the site. So both those need to be taken into account. And number 15, again, I talked there about 100 metres upstream and downstream, but in the actual text of the plan, it also talks about 1 kilometre upstream. So just very briefly, two major concerns that I deal with here, mostly around the E. coli limits. And I've just put up on a slide there, you do have it at the back of your evidence. I guess the first issue is around compliance. At the moment, Appendix E has 1,000 coliform units per 100 mil. And you'll see there the upstream and downstream values for a period of time. So the red ones denote ones that have exceeded 1,000. And you'll see that upstream, there are a number of occasions that it has exceeded 1,000. There are actually very few occasions there that it is less than 130. In terms of downstream, there's obviously a lot of those times the E. coli levels have gone up and would obviously exceed 1,000 on a number of occasions. So I guess the point there is just that there's a major issue here in terms of compliance with Appendix E with the 1,000 units, mainly because of what's coming upstream from upstream already. So even if the plant wasn't there, the Matara at that site would not comply. But importantly, Alliance do add to those, and obviously in the long term needs to address that issue. To my mind, what's important here also is the time frame to meet whatever standards are put up, and it needs to be reasonable. At Lawnville, we had a number of discussions there, and it was something like 15 years was put in place to meet those standards. So that needs to be acknowledged somewhere, but Alliance do acknowledge they're going to have to do something about their discharge longer term. But it needs to be part of a catchment approach. The other issue, just to give you an idea, that the swimmable issue is the other one I'd just like to talk about, the one that was added by Fish and Gameless and been included in the officer's report. This is a view looking upriver from the Matara Bridge, which is the site that's been recommended for bathing. As you can see, it's not going to be that easy to get into the water for a start, unless you jump off the bridge, I guess. But importantly, up on the left-hand side is the Alliance plant and where the discharge occurs. So it's some 350 metres from the discharge through to the bridge, which has been proposed as a bathing site. And as you will have seen from the values before, it would very rarely be met in terms of upstream now, and certainly wouldn't be downstream of the plant. I note that the 1000 that is in the Appendix E, the new NPS actually talks about 540, so it's even tighter, so there's even more of an issue there. So what to do about this? Appendix E, as we've heard, is obviously a rollover or interim standards before the limit setting process takes place, and obviously there'll need to be some discussion around that, particularly around this catchment approach and the period before these standards need to be met. Alliance are in a very unfortunate position that their consent for the plant comes up in 2019, the same year that the limit setting process will be done for the Matara. So whether those limits are in place then, or whether the rollover ones are used, or whether a new set of ones are used, or the NPS is completely up in the air. But certainly Alliance acknowledge that that their inputs in time are going to have to ensure that it's no worse than what's coming down from upstream.
All right, thank you very much for that. I think what we'll do now is we'll take our morning tea, and then we'll come back in 20 minutes' time and we'll have questions for you.
Okay.
So we'll adjourn.